Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
All right. Before we begin the show, a couple things that I forgot to add. First up, I'm going to talk a lot about Elon and Twitter. Or we're going to cover that quite a bit in this episode. I skim the top. I don't go into any great detail on what's going on with Twitter and Elon. And if you want to be more informed on what's going on with Elon and Twitter, then I highly suggest listening to the Daily Tech News show that happened on Good Friday with Rich Stoffolino and Sarah Lane. And then there was one the day before that, which was obviously Thursday, with Justin Robert Young and Rich Stoffolino. They do a great job of covering this. Oh, Patrick Norton was on Friday as well. But they do a great job of covering this in way greater detail, and they do it better than I could ever do it anyway. So go listen to that. Also, the SMR podcast, they do a great job as well, so you can listen to their latest episode. And I just wanted to say, a thank you to Allison and Steve for spending time with me. I don't know if I mentioned Allison's website. So it is podfeet.com. If you want to go and you want to subscribe to Allison's podcast, that's the place to start. And then one last thing, we have merchandise. So I'm going to put the link in the show notes, but we have a coffee cup, a white coffee cup, a black coffee cup, and a t-shirt to start with. I don't have much of an imagination, so I kind of put these things together. If you want to see something different, or if you have a better idea, I am happy to hear out your thoughts. But so there's a link in the show notes if you want to purchase merchandise for the show. I try to keep the prices low. That's it. I hope you guys enjoy the show. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Kilowatt. My name is Bodie, and I am your host, and I sound a little different because I'm recording on my laptop, because over the last 10 days, it's been a very busy and crazy week for me. I was able to go to San Diego and spend some time with very good friends of ours and celebrate their 2-year-old son's birthday, so that was very exciting. Couldn't get him to call me Uncle Bodie, but he called me Daddy. So I'm sure that made his dad very happy. The last time I saw this young gentleman, he was one and didn't really like me. This time I saw him, for his birthday, and, he was quite fond of me, and we hung out a lot, which meant that I didn't do a lot of recording when I was in San Diego visiting. I was also able to say goodbye to some friends who were moving to New York who live in that area. I was able to celebrate a little bit of Easter with some family and friends there in San Diego. So that was all very exciting. It was a great week, but it didn't provide a lot of time for recording. A lot of it was done in between moments where I could just get away. So the audio quality of this episode is going to be a little crazy. Just so you know. And this episode is actually going to be split into 3 different parts. The first part is a collaboration I did with Allison Sheridan. So Allison and Steve Sheridan came to Arizona And on one happy Friday, we got together, we had lunch, we rode in a Waymo van, we had dinner, we chilled out. I mean, we spent a good long time hanging out, and I had a great time, and it was so nice of them to share their very short getaway that they had with me. So I basically got one third of their short vacation. So that was really nice of them, and I appreciate that. When they were here, Allison and I recorded a crossover episode of Chit Chat Across the Pond and Kilowatt. So I'm going to encourage you, because Allison has already recorded Allison has already released her version on Chit Chat Across the Pond. I'm going to encourage you to go and subscribe to Chit Chat Across the Pond and listen to our collaboration there. And then I want you to come back to this podcast, because not only do I have a really cool collaboration with Allison to share with you this week, I also have some EV and Tesla news. And then Elon, as if I couldn't add more to this podcast for you, Elon decided that he was going to go and give an interview to a TED conference. And oh, by the way, he's going to try and buy Twitter and all that stuff. So all that craziness, I tack on at the end of the show. So the way this show is going to be structured today is me rambling, which you're hearing right now. The second part will be the collaboration. Ooh, that's a hard word. Collaboration between me and Allison, and we talk about driving regular ICE vehicles when you haven't driven them in a while. We talk about, we took a Waymo ride, which was a lot of fun. We talk about that. And then we talk about why or why not people should buy batteries, more specifically, Allison and Steve should buy backup batteries for their homes. So all very, it was a lot of fun. So the second part of this show is going to be news. And boy, howdy, we've got plenty of news. And then the third part will be me breaking down that TED Talk that Elon did. I think it was on Thursday. So lots to get to. But before we get to the Kilopod, I think that's what we called it. Or maybe it was PodWatt. I don't know. Before we get to our collaboration with Allison, I do want to thank Larry. Larry went to PayPal and gave me a very generous donation, which, Larry, you're the first person who's ever given me anything on PayPal. So thank you very much. That was very kind of you. I really appreciate it. And I just want to let everybody know, as with Patreon, any money that you contribute to the show goes back into the show to make it better. It doesn't matter if it comes from PayPal or Patreon or whatever. Any money that you contribute goes right back into the show. So Larry, your money will go back into making the show better. Thank you again. Thank you very much. I really appreciate it. All right, let's go ahead and jump into our collaboration with Allison Sheridan. Although at this point, you should probably turn it off and go to Chit Chat Across the Pond and subscribe to her podcast and come back later and we'll talk about some news. But let's go ahead and I'm going to put it in just in case there is a couple of people who don't know what's good for them. I'm going to put in the collaboration with Allison. Here we go. Hi, this is Bodie Grimm.
And hi, this is Allison Sheridan.
And you're listening to the Kilofeet Podcast Network.
We don't know whose show this is.
No, it's definitely not mine.
So I'm actually sitting in Bodie's house. We have met in real life. It's amazing.
Yes, you can tell it's my house because there's lots of echo.
Well, he offered to let us record outside where it's 93 degrees, but I declined that opportunity.
Yeah, we missed the bet when we should have recorded in the morning time. That would have been a little bit cooler for sure.
It's like we're not very smart. Well, we decided we wanted to do another crossover episode since we're together and he has a lot of microphones and equipment, so that sounded like fun, right?
Yeah, a lot of microphones and equipment with just no know-how.
Other than that. So if my audience doesn't know who Bodie Grimm is, Bodie, why don't you tell them a little bit about yourself?
I am the host of the Kilowatt Podcast, where we talk about electric vehicles, renewable energy, and just overall geekiness, like batteries and stuff like that. Why don't you do the same?
All right. So to the Kilowatt audience, if you haven't heard me before, I am the host of the Podfeet Podcast. primarily the No Silicast, which is a technology geek podcast with an ever so slight Apple bias. Definitely geeky. I talk about whatever I want, and it's kind of hard to pin me down. The best SEO possible is something like the No Silicast. Nobody can ever find it, but you can't ever accuse me of being off topic as a result.
Yeah, and it's hard to spell. Like, is Nozilla a word?
It's my name spelled backwards.
So it is a word. It's just not a backwards word. Oh, that makes sense.
And that's why it's an S. It's Nozillacast, not Nozillacast. I have to pay for the domain nozillacast.com because people type that in instead.
Yeah, actually, that confused me for a really long time early on.
All right, so we've got some fun subjects to talk about here. I wanted to start by talking about how interesting it was to drive an ICE vehicle for the first time, an internal combustion engine vehicle after, I don't know, 2 years probably since I've driven one.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's been a long time. So Steve rented a Sentra, a Nissan Sentra. It's got CarPlay, so you'd think I'd like that. I don't. But anyway, one of the funny things before I went to drive the car by myself, Steve said, okay, remember to turn off the car and remember to lock the doors and take the keys with you. And the reason he said that is we drive Tesla vehicles, and our cars, you drive up and you let off the brake and, or let off the accelerator, I should say, and you just get out of the car and you don't do anything else. I don't put it in park. I don't lock the door. I do close the door, but I don't do anything else.
Yeah. You know, okay. So I had Sierra's car. Sierra has a Tesla Model 3. I had that for a month all to myself. The two coolest things that I thought that I actually wouldn't like was the fact that you don't ever turn it on or turn it off, but the walking away from it and just trusting that it's going to lock, and you hear that, you know, 15, 20 feet away, you hear that little honk. Mm-hmm. But the second thing is right up here at the Safeway, right next to the house.
That's where I drove.
Oh yeah.
Actually, no, it was a different Safeway, but
there was a white Model Y that parked so close to Sierra's car that I could not get it. I could barely open it. And I was like, well, I'm going to have to wait for this guy. And I did not call him a very nice name, but I'm going to have to wait.
Could have been a woman.
Or lady. To come out and remove their car so they can get in. And I'm sitting there and I'm just kind of steaming.
Fuming.
And then I was like, oh, I can do summon. So NCR gave me access to the app, thank God. And I was able to use summon to get the car out. And I immediately called her and used a lot of expletives about how cool this was that I was able to get myself out of this car.
Yeah. So to explain to people how it works, basically on the app, you can say summon, and I've never trusted it to drive in a parking lot or something like that, but I have used it for that exact same thing. And I was so excited when somebody parked too close because I had an excuse to do it. I've done it twice. You press and hold on a button. As soon as you let go with your finger, it stops driving, but you press and hold on this and the car pulls out for you. It's awesome.
And it's still looking for other vehicles. So if you're not paying attention, so when I was doing it, a car came up from behind and I didn't necessarily see it because I was concentrating on what I was doing. And it just stopped on its own. And then the car drove by and then it started back up. It was a really cool feature of the Tesla. Totally worth whatever she paid for.
Yeah, exactly. The thing I wanted to say that was, there were two big things that I did have trouble with, and I was glad Steve reminded me, like, there's a push button to turn on the car, so I didn't know how to do that. I hit the windshield wiper 4 times trying to change gears, because on the Tesla, there's a stalk that's right where the windshield wiper is on this car, and so instead of reaching down to the gear shifter below to go into reverse or forward drive, I didn't feel stupid at all.
How many times did you try to put it in self-driving mode?
Oh, never, because well, I don't use self-driving mode very often, I got to admit, especially on city streets, but we've talked about that before. The weird thing was to have to use the brakes, you know, because I don't use the brakes on my car, like, ever. Maybe a couple times a week, maybe, at the most. Seriously, you just feather the accelerator.
No, okay, so that's the other cool thing, is everybody keeps talking about one brake or one pedal driving. And I was like, that doesn't make it. That doesn't sound appealing to me at all. But the more I drove this car, the more I was like, oh, I get one pedal driving. Like, a friend of ours was from out of town with her kids. And the little boy, he was like totally like enraptured with this car. And so we would go for long drives, and he's really smart. He's 10. And we would talk about the one pedal driving, and he's like, you know, he's in the back seat, but he's like sitting up so he can kind of see what my feet are doing. Because he was just like, he lives on a farm in Minnesota. You know, it's not like if you lived on a farm in Minnesota, it would be, you know, 50 years ago, it would be a totally different story, but, they have modern, you know, comforts like bathrooms and stuff, but not much more than that.
So this was like being in a spaceship for him, right?
Oh, he loved it. We took lots of rides.
My grandson loves it too. But he mostly just wants me to go really fast, Mimir. Go really fast. Let's do it.
Yeah.
So his brain's turning into jelly now because I've done it so many times.
You know, that's okay because they're young. They reform. It's fine.
So that was all I wanted to say about the ice vehicle. It was a strange experience, and I don't think people who don't drive electric vehicles understand exactly how different it feels to drive an EV. It's just a completely different experience.
Yeah. And when I talked to Sierra, we're going to go into another topic here in just a second. But when I talked to Sierra about her car and when I had to give it back to them, I was like, and in real life, I swear a lot. So I was like, how am I going to give this bleepity bleep car back to you and drive the piece of bleep that I happen to own, which is a nice
car. You have a really nice car.
Like it's a total, like there are so many things that you don't have to think about with a Tesla in particular, not just electric cars, because, you know, the electric car part is pretty standard across the range of vehicles that you can buy. It's the features that Tesla puts in. I'm like, there's so many good features in there that you don't think about, you don't notice, much like what Apple does with their products.
Like the walking away from the car thing.
Fantastic. So you had that experience of driving an ICE vehicle, but you had a first experience, which was driving in riding in a vehicle that had no driver whatsoever.
Yeah. So we're in Phoenix, and Bodhi said, you guys want to go for a ride in one of the Waymo vehicles? And it was a really, really cool experience. So the Waymo vehicle has no driver, literally no drive in the car. Well, we have a little suspicion about something about that. But the first thing was the app itself. Bodhi let us set it up ourselves. And it was essentially like ordering an Uber. You go in, you tell it where you want to, go. And it knows where you're starting from, and the car just drives up in front of your house. Or actually, in Bodhi's case, always one house off.
Yeah.
100% of the time, right?
My next door neighbor, George, just to the, oh, there it goes, south of us, I would like to know if it picks him up one house down, or if it picks him up at my house.
Like, does it trade places, or is everybody offset by one?
Yeah.
But so the vehicle shows up, and what kind of car did you say it was?
It's a Chrysler minivan, it's a Chrysler Pacifica hybrid.
Okay, so it's a great big car. It's got captain's chair, so it's got six seats in it. Bodhi was nice enough to get in the back and let Steve and I have the middle two seats. But when the car drove up, I noticed that it has these spinning things on the four corners of the car. And are those the radar?
LiDAR.
Okay.
So it's got a LiDAR bucket on the top. There's probably radar in it, but it's got cameras, LiDAR, and the LiDAR bucket, and then the LiDAR on the side.
Yeah, you called it a popcorn bucket. That's what it looks like. It's an upside down bucket on the top. And then did it have anything else visibly on it? I'm going to look at my photo here to see what I remember what it looked like. I'm showing Bodhi the photo. There's something on the back, just some big white piece. We don't know what that is. Oh, and the popcorn bucket is a big black dome. Actually, it looks like Darth Vader's helmet.
Yeah.
That's probably a better description.
Actually, it does. It looks like the back of Darth Vader's helmet.
And it's sitting up on a white dome, too, like that goes the full width of the car.
Yeah.
But it's got, and actually, I lied. The spinny things maybe are only on the front. They're not on the back. So they're only on two of the corners. So we're super observant, aren't we?
We're so excited. There's one on the front.
Oh, yeah, yeah. There is one dead center in the front. Yeah. So so we get in the car, and the display said, start ride. They suggest you put on your seatbelts at that point. Oh, when we first got in, it said, you'll notice there's no driver in this car, or something along those lines.
Yeah, it says welcome, and then your name. And the cool thing about Waymo's is it'll give your initials. So in the weird attempt that you don't know that you ordered a Waymo, or you don't know which Waymo to get in, you just get to the one that's got your
that's up on the front of the car on the windshield. So it's sort of like where you'd see an Uber or Lyft sign. Instead, it said BG on the front of it. The other thing was, you said when you order a Waymo, sometimes it comes with a driver. You called it Waymo Roulette?
Yes. I've ordered them to show them off to friends in the past, and they have drivers, and you just have to keep canceling until you get one without a driver.
And when we got the one that did say it was driverless, it had confetti on the screen. It was all very excited about the fact that we weren't going to have a driver. So we get in the car, and, you know, I've made a lot of complaints about the self-driving in the neighborhoods on Tesla, and I've described it as a drunk first-time driver, and because it's truly terrible. It is a perfect example. If it comes up to a T-intersection, I've got a T-intersection in my neighborhood where I've got a stop and the people going across do not, and it comes to the stop, and it must take 12 false starts before it goes here, as it inches its way around the corner. And then it accelerates way too fast once it gets into the turn. And you said you've experienced that as well, right?
Yes. Brad and I were in the car and he let me drive, and I'd not driven the new full self-driving beta yet. And I wasn't in driving. I don't even know why I said driving. I was in the driver's seat. And there's a corner at Elliott in Alma School. There's like a Bosa Donuts there. And I'll never forget the Bosa Donuts, because the first time the car was like, it did not care what was around. The car just zoomed around like Mario Andretti when it was making the right turn. And it was terrifying. And I said to Brad, I was like, let's go back around and see if it does it again. The second time it did it, just, you know, similar busy traffic on a Sunday. The second time it did it, it was so cautious. It was just doing that thing that you said. It was like, the first time it was like, it was just like, I'm going. Like, I don't
know what else. So one is really dangerous and one is really annoying.
Well, they're both potentially dangerous because, like, people are looking at you going, what is this guy doing? Like, yeah. Why? Just go.
Why is he driving so poorly? Yeah, you might get hurt in a different way. In contrast, the Waymo was so smooth. It was cautious when I wanted it to be. It went really fast when it seemed appropriate. It made smooth turns. I was phenomenally impressed. It came up to in a parking lot at one point, and it had bumps, and it slowed down for the bumps. We were in a neighborhood with kind of the big wide bumps, and it took those nice and slow. So anyway, it braked at the right rate to come to a stop. It took a couple of left turns in front of traffic, and it was perfect at that. Steve was watching that really carefully. He was doing some recording and just going, oh, is it going to do okay? Because here comes, oncoming traffic. It's turning left on a green light, and it did it exactly right.
Yeah. And this is the first time I've experienced it being that smooth. Like, normally there's times when you're just terrified.
You said it was a while since you've done it though, right?
At least 3 months.
Oh, only 3 months though.
Yeah. Okay. It might have been December, so we might be talking 4 months, but it hasn't been all that long.
So one of the reasons Bodie chose the local Trader Joe's, it's a mile from his house, because you're coming up on a boulevard, and there's a left turn into the parking lot of Trader Joe's, not at a light. And he said, I like this one because it will never make that left turn. And he's had it go, what is it? It normally goes through the light, so it's missed it. And then it does a right-hand turn and does a bunch of looping around through a neighborhood.
Correct.
But this time, it took 3 total passes before it actually found its way into the parking lot.
And it took a different way than I'm used to.
And it took a different way each time it missed the turn.
One time it went 3 miles out of the way.
Yeah, we were in the car, what, a good 8 or 9 minutes longer than we should have been. It's a 1 mile drive, and we went. It was a nice drive, though.
Yeah, it was nice and pleasant, and it dropped us off in a nice area. I was telling Steve and Allison the first time that I did this, it was during COVID, and there's a senior time at the Trader Joe's, and I planned it so that I could go to Trader Joe's and buy my stuff, because they absolutely won't let you in if you're not a senior during that time. They were very strict about it at that location anyway. So I was like, you know, I planned it so I could be there right when it opens up for everybody else. And there was a line. So there's like a lot of people outside. It's really where I'm going with this. And I was like, okay, no worries. What I'm going to do is I'm going to go, I'll get my stuff, come back. And the car drops me off directly in front of the doors where there are seniors trying to cross the crosswalk to get to their chair, to their vehicles. There are people lining up outside the Trader Joe's, and it just opens up the door, and you open up the door, and you're just sitting there completely exposed and
being really obnoxious because you've driven up in front of everybody. You're in the crosswalk then.
It was an, it was, you know, okay. So yeah,
but
it was
the doors in the crosswalk. Open out.
So you know those two posts that keep people from driving into the car into the building. Mm-hmm. It was like right there. It was like I could three steps and I was inside the Trader Joe's. It was so close.
Not quite what you're looking for. Yeah, when we drove it, when it drove us, I should say, it did it a little bit around the corner, so we were at an easy spot to pull over. I also noticed when our car left, it went in front of the to the store, just like what you were talking about. And a woman got to the edge of the crosswalk. She did not step out. She stopped because she saw the car coming, and it just sat there and waited until she went. Even though she never stepped into the crosswalk, it could have gone, and you know, a jerk would have gone, but a courteous driver would have waited for her to go anyway. But it definitely saw her not in the crosswalk, but ready to get in the crosswalk, and it said, "Nope, I'm going to wait."
And she didn't. She was very smart because she didn't just step out in front of it, but she was cautious. She's like, she kind of had a couple false starts and she's watching the car, and the car just sat there patiently. Yeah. And then, you know,
by the way, I've developed a theory. Watch old people cross streets. Watch how cautious they are. My theory is that's how they got to be old people.
Yeah. You know what? That's a good theory.
Put that together, huh? I think I'm onto something.
You're definitely have a good hypothesis started. We'll have to test it.
Exactly. Keep your observations up. Well, so after that ride, we went into Trader Joe's, got a couple of things, and we came out. We ordered another one. The second one was like a completely different driver. Still not bad, I don't think, but much more aggressive, wouldn't you say?
It was closer to the thing I experienced the first couple of times that I'd driven it without the, oh my God, I'm going to die feeling. I guess what I'm saying is it's slowly ramped down the anxiety level.
Okay.
Right. And today was actually fine. It was like, you know, driving with a...
I wouldn't even say it was anything like a 17-year-old. I don't think it was that bad. It was just a fast driver. So it took turns quickly. But it didn't bottom out the car or anything like that. It didn't go flying over speed bumps or anything like that, right?
No, actually it didn't. It did a pretty good job. There was some hesitation and there was some... like changing lanes was a little more aggressive and that kind of thing. But... Yeah. In general, what were your impressions?
I thought that the overall experience was really, really good. I thought the method of ordering the car was intuitive. It was just like you would hope with an Uber. You saw the car. You knew what time the car was going to come. You had a pretty good idea of when that was going to be. Even with the more aggressive driver, I still became comfortable very quickly in the speed and the fact that I was in a car that was being driven by a machine in theory. And so I didn't think that it wasn't scary at all. I mean, it was freaky at first, but I noticed I stopped paying attention to the fact that there was nobody in the front seat.
Yeah. And imagine that your first time riding in your Tesla when you got the beta, that was more of what the Waymo was, but there was no driver. That's how it acted.
Yeah, there's nothing you can do about it.
This time, I have to give props to Waymo because it was so much better, like significantly better than anything I'd experienced before. So, but it was weird that one car was super cautious and smooth and the other car was a little jerky, but a little more aggressive. So maybe they're running different. Maybe the algorithm is, you know,
testing different versions.
Yeah.
Well, I noticed that on the steering wheel, it said, don't touch the steering wheel. The driver is driving. It was the exact wording of it. It was something about the driver. And I have, so here's my theory. It's not a self-driving car at all. There's a bunch of people back in a control room and they've got little steering wheels and they're actually doing the driving.
I think this story was on Daily Tech News Show. I know I didn't do it, but I heard it on some podcast. And there was a service, like a delivery service, maybe a food delivery service, where that's what they were doing. They didn't have autonomous cars, or maybe the cars were partially autonomous, and then they had a driver, but a remote driver.
Okay.
That was able to, like, in certain situations, navigate. I can't remember exactly what the story was, but it was very similar to what you're talking about.
That wasn't one of those little carts that delivers food, was it?
No, but they have those at ASU. The last time I was visiting my little brother, he goes there, and I was driving home, there's a bunch of college adults, not kids, but college adults just standing there waiting to cross the crosswalk, and there's this little robot just hanging out right there.
Waiting to cross with them? Yeah, that's very cute. I would love to see that. I think that's genius.
It's about the size of a cooler. It's not very big. Or this one wasn't very big.
So it's just delivering sodas in a burrito or something?
Or weed. I don't know. It's legal here in Arizona. You never know.
Whatever it could be. Well, we did notice that the car that was real cautious was a newer car. It was painted, had a rainbow logo on it. It was, you thought maybe that was an upgraded version?
It's definitely newer because within the last probably 4 to 6 months, I've seen those popping up. And I think there's only one, but I could be wrong.
Okay. So it could have been, it could have had newer hardware even?
Could have. Possible.
Interesting. And that was the one that was more cautious, was the rainbow logo one.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, I thought it was really cool. It was, I love to be able to say I've actually been in a self-driving vehicle, a fully, fully autonomous vehicle. It was crazy fun.
You know what? And I use my wife as a bellwether for these things, but it was so good that I think she would feel comfortable riding in it. And she does not enjoy the self-driving in the Tesla. So,
well, I mean, who does? I got to keep testing it, but I every time I do, I regret it, you know, because it doesn't, I don't know, it's still terrifying.
You know, Brad and Sierra use it all the time. They only have one car and they use it all the time. And there are times when they'll take it out just because they kind of want to, like, Brad's very analytical. If you talk to that guy for 3 seconds, you realize how analytical he is. But so sometimes they'll just drive on their own, just kind of see, like, to, I guess, check in with themselves and see where they're at. Okay. But they are so militant about driving. Like, if one of them is reaching up to touch something, they're like, no, I'll do that. You drive. Like, that's how bad they are.
No, well, I think that's really smart. I'm afraid I have that conversation in my car where Steve's like trying to get a podcast ready. It's like, no, I'm right here. I can do that.
No, they do a good job, but it's definitely like they take the full self-driving, I guess, very seriously.
Oh, okay. Oh, you're saying so if one of them's driving and it's self-driving, yeah, they would start to play with the controls or something.
Even if you look like you're staring off into space, they're like, they put the other person in check. They're like, are you paying attention to what's going on here? Like,
okay. See, I find it so stressful to drive with full self-driving on. I would never take my eyes off the road. I mean, not in a million years. It's much harder than when I'm driving.
It's unfortunate that you don't have your car here because we have nice wide streets. Like, I don't know if you noticed like how much room we have. I think you'd feel more comfortable here than where you live, which is a little bit more cramped and definitely more people.
More people, more cars, more everything. Yeah, you're right. You're right. The streets are very wide here. I got a ticket in Arizona one time because I couldn't feel how fast I should be driving because the roads are so wide and there's nothing out, you know, there's miles of nothing quite frequently. And I don't know how you tell the speed limit if it's not how fast is the car in front of you going. How do you do that?
I think there's a speedometer on every car.
So are there like signs or something?
There are occasionally signs in Arizona. If you drive here and you get on the I-17, at some points the I-17 is 75 miles an hour. Sometimes it's 65. Sometimes it's 55. You have to be very careful on the I-17 here if you're traveling
watch
that
the
corridor.
Whole time. Well, that was one thing about the Waymo was it would accelerate right up to the exact speed limit and it would hold it. And I noticed it got to 35 and it was driving at 35 and I saw the speed limit sign. And then all of a sudden it ramped up to 40 and I looked and it had just changed to 40. So it was going to the limit because, again, there's not cars in front of you most of the time here.
Yeah. Yeah. So. No, that's a really cool feature. And it does it smoother than Tesla. Tesla's like, oh, there's a 10-mile gap. Boom.
Yeah.
Now you're at 45.
Well, we've even had the worst problem where it all of a sudden, like on the freeway, it'll say, oh, you wanted to go 52. No, I did not. Because, you know, we're going 65 or 70 and all of a sudden it'll just slow down.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's a little twitchy. Yeah. It's almost ready, Elon. It's just you almost got just a little bit of tweaking.
Yeah, almost ready until everybody else decides that they're going to ask for their money back because it drives like a student driver.
Exactly. A slightly inebriated student driver. Yeah. Wait, let's shift gears.
Yes, let's do that.
So we're going to talk about solar energy here. Did you want to ask me questions about what we're doing here?
Yes, and I do. I forgot what I'm supposed to ask you. So,
okay.
Let's talk about your system at first. Let's talk about what you have on your home.
Yeah, so last summer, Steve and I had 22 N-phase solar panels put into our house. And we haven't got a full year of energy usage and credits and all that kind of stuff yet. So we don't really know whether we're generating more than we're consuming. We did get a negative bill 1 month. So we think maybe we're doing pretty good because that was in early spring. The way the energy credits work in California is they measure all of the energy you generate for a year, and they measure all of the energy you consume during the year. And at the end of the year, if you have generated more than you consume, you don't have to pay them anything. You actually get paid back. You get paid back a pittance on, you don't get very much money. I think it's like a nickel a kilowatt hour. Or is it kilowatts? I can never keep track. Steve will correct me later on that. But so you do get credit if you overproduce. If you underproduce, they charge you at the retail rates. And they've got some nice complex algorithms to be sure that you can't possibly do the math yourself, because they're watching when you use the energy. So like, let's say I ran the dishwasher during the peak hours. If that was part of the math, they would charge us more. I don't know how they're going to do that. But anyway, so with that, we essentially are using the grid in California as our battery. So we're storing energy, and then we take energy out and we store it, and we put energy in and we take energy out. So if it might be that I'm using energy that was created from coal, but the energy I put into the grid is going to my neighbor's house. So they're getting this, they're actually using the solar energy. We don't really have a way of knowing.
Okay. Can you go through what's the difference between a normal panel and an Enphase?
Oh, Enphase is just a brand.
Oh,
that's a company. So we did it through a company called Solar Optimum in Southern California, and they were super responsive for quite a while. And lately they've been harder to work with. But what we're looking at now, the reason we're talking to them again is because we're looking into getting batteries.
So now that you're looking at spending a large amount of money on batteries, are they responsive again?
No, that's the thing that's weird. They're kind of hot and cold. We'll get a lot of information, and then you can't get anybody on the phone for a week. And it's like, come on, that's kind of weird. I mean, while we're waving dollar bills, usually you expect that response, right?
You would definitely expect some more attention and love.
Yeah, exactly. So right now we're debating, well, first of all, we can't entirely figure out why we're buying batteries. We're not sure, because like I said, the grid is our battery. So if we overproduce, then we don't actually need batteries, because we're overproducing. We're never going to be charged anything except for whatever the monthly fee that they're going to charge us for no reason. There has been a bill that's been in talks in Southern California, or in California, where they're going to start penalizing you for having solar panels. It's a big thing. It's off right now. A lot of people got really, really upset and did all kinds of campaigns against it, including Arnold Schwarzenegger, by the way, did a great letter in the New York Times against it. Hopefully that won't happen, but they want to incentivize you to get batteries. So I think we got twitchy about it and thought, well, why don't we just get batteries? Now, the main reason you want to have batteries in California is for fires, for power outages, rolling brownouts. And we've been lucky enough. We live in an area that, it doesn't flood. There's not fires. The weather is pretty nice. But it turns out weather is changing. It's inexplicable why I think the climate is getting a little bit different lately. But this week while we're in Phoenix, it's actually hotter at our house than it is at Bodie's house. And we live like 3 miles from the beach. So it should never be that hot, but it was up in the mid-90s. I think 96 was the peak yesterday. So you can't really count on the fact maybe we're going to have to start having rolling brownouts. But we put in air conditioning at the same time we put in the solar panels, so we wouldn't feel guilt about the air conditioning. So hopefully we have that covered. But I thought it might be a little interesting to talk about the two different brands. We're looking at Enphase panels, but also Tesla Powerwalls.
Yeah. And so when we were talking about this before, I thought that Tesla was only selling Powerwalls from, like, maybe it was 2021 on, only if you bought the system with it. Like,
you mean the panels as well?
The panels, yeah. The whole you got to buy everything together.
Yeah, it's been kind of coming and going. There were none available for a while, and then we just got a notice that they got a big shipment of them that they're able to sell them, and they're absolutely able to sell us Powerwalls to go with our Enphase system.
I think that's great. I know that Tesla has a deal with Sunrun, which is an Arizona company, and Sunrun can sell Powerwalls, but Sunrun won't sell me Powerwalls because I have to buy a system from them.
Oh, that's kind of weird.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wonder.
And maybe Enphase won't sell me Powerwalls, but you can buy them because you bought a system from them. I don't know.
Yeah, that might be. Now, do you have Tesla panels?
We do. We have SolarCity panels.
Okay, which were bought by Tesla. Okay, and so do they use the cool Tesla app for it?
They do, and I don't necessarily like, it's very visual. I don't necessarily like the Tesla app because I would rather it be more informative than visual.
Oh, because it's real pretty. It shows electricity coming out of the sky and into your out of your house, right?
Yes.
So is it more eye candy than useful?
Well, it does have hidden inside the app. It does have what you're generating, and you can select it. So I can say this is what my house is using.
Oh, you can see consumption and energy production both.
Yeah, and this is what I'm feeding back to the grid and that kind of thing. Okay. So
this is an audio podcast.
This is a very audio podcast. I'm just showing you. But the thing that is frustrating to me is like the, I would just like it to be put in a very simple, easy to understand. Like this is how much you generated today. This is how much you use. That's how it used to be before they made this big grand change. It's like, you generated this much, you use this much, you took from the grid this much, or you gave to the grid this much, and that's it. Like that's all I need. I don't need the fancy house with the.
Well, that's so funny because we had dinner with some friends and a gentleman we hadn't met before. A gentleman named Jolly came on or was there, and he showed us his Tesla app for his Tesla Powerwall. And I swear to you, it was the look of it that made me go, "Ooh, I want Tesla Powerwalls better than Enphase because look, it looks like it'd be really cool."
Yeah, that is a really I've seen a Tesla app or the Tesla app with the Powerwalls. It does look very cool. It looks really cool, and you can do way more things. You know, obviously.
Oh, okay. Then with just the panels,
because you can set it. You can say, "I want it to be 80%." Basically, what you can do with your car in terms of the battery and stuff like that.
Okay.
You can say, "Well, I think it's going to be. I think we're going to have some bad weather, so I want to charge it to 100%. And the Tesla will send out a little alert if there's going to be like hurricanes or whatever and charge people's Powerwalls to 100%. So they're prepared just in case something happens.
It will actually charge it to 100% even if you didn't ask it to?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they send out a little alert.
And they push a change to change it to, wow, that's interesting.
I don't know if there's anything, I don't know if it alerts you that this is happening and you can cancel it. I don't know. I would assume that they would have to do that because people might get aired.
Yeah, I would think so. They'd have to say something. Now, one thing that's interesting is the pricing difference between Tesla and Enphase. Now, I'm going to give the prices there right now. 2022, there's a 26% ITC credit from the federal government. So the prices I'm going to give you is the way they price them at Solar Optimum is the price less that 20% or 26% credit. So this is not what you actually write a check for. I think it's going to lag by a year or something. You got to write the 26% bigger check. But we're looking at getting two batteries. And by the way, I can't explain why two batteries because I can't explain why I'm getting one battery. So, but I'm sure we need two. If nothing goes wrong, like if they don't go, oh, well, your house is going to need extra work because of blah, 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 which is what always happens. Two Tesla Powerwalls are $20,000. Now, two Enphase Powerwalls are $18,500. So $1,500 more, if I did the subtraction correct. It's got an 8 in it. We never know.
You did.
So the Enphase Powerwall or the Enphase batteries are $1,500 cheaper. However, 13 kilowatts for Tesla and 10 kilowatts for the Enphase per battery. So that means that it's like $700 per kilowatt for Tesla and it's $900 per kilowatt for Enphase. So it's actually a better deal. It's a little bit more money, but you're actually getting a lot more stored energy for that.
Right. And so for me, I would like to have three because we have two air conditioners. We do have power outages here, but I'm kind of in the same boat that you are, is we don't have enough to where I can justify spending $30,000-ish. Like the more power worlds you buy, the cheaper it gets because you don't have to pay so much for installation.
I think there's actually a part you have to buy that you don't have to buy three times. I think
right.
That was part of why it was cheaper.
Well, it's that, and they already got the people out there installing it. And
right, right.
So for me, I think three would be good because I want to be when I'm at work and my wife and kids are home and the power goes out, I don't necessarily want to be in a fire station that's got a generator backup that's nice and cool and my wife and kids are roasting because, you know, there's no power for them.
Exactly.
One of the things we were debating is whether or not with Tesla Powerwalls and I guess any solar panel would work is what what happens when the power goes out for extended periods? And you went ahead and did some research on this. You phoned a friend.
Well, I think people would like to hear it directly from the contract that we're going to sign. How to deal with your Tesla Powerwall?
Okay.
Should we torture them?
No, and if you understand what Allison's about to say, please email both of us and let us know.
Bodie@918digital.com, Allison@podfeed.com. So there's an attachment to the contract that says how to operate your Tesla battery during a power outage. So our real question was, can you use energy from the battery while you're charging it from the sun and you have no power? Okay. This is why I had to phone a friend, because I read this to Bodie and he was just like, wait, what? I think you said this reads like it was written by me.
Right? That is what I said, yes.
Okay, so they said there's three different bullets here. Number one, if you are not home during the day and the power goes off, and when you come home, the sun is set, you can use the battery until the next morning, but you must make sure that 20% charge remains until the next day using your battery application. Okay, that was just a poor sentence structure. Using your battery application, you should make sure that 20% charge remains until the next day. So you can only use 80%. If the battery does not have a 20% charge the next day and the grid is still off, your solar system will not turn on and will not charge your battery.
Which is interesting.
Yeah, interesting. But okay, gets below 20%, it can't charge it. So I think so far so good. We're following along. It's the second two bullets. If the following morning the power is still not on, your solar system will begin to recharge the battery, assuming you kept the 20% battery charge the previous night, like we just told you to do, and the solar system will charge the battery up to 100%. But once the battery is charged 100%, you should turn off the breaker in the combiner box and match your production with consumption. So they're saying you got to turn it off, and then you can start using it. I think we're trying to figure out, is that now saying you could use your solar system while it's actually you're using the battery and the solar system is still not charging the battery anymore, but you can use power from the battery?
That's a really good question. You know, the thing that irritates me is we live in the age of electronics and you have to go flip your own breaker. Like they don't have something in there that keeps you from doing that. Like, how do I know what I'm generating and not generating, especially if the power's out? Like,
well, yeah, what if it charges up to 100% while you're not there? Yeah. What if you're not there the next morning? Like you go to work. So the battery's going to charge it. Well, but no, we had to stop it the night before.
Okay. There's a third.
I shouldn't have to, what I'm saying, if it's for $20,000 to $30,000, I should not have to go flip a breaker and figure out what I'm doing. I'm doing this because I am not a smart person and not capable of doing this. I shouldn't need to know that I need to go flip a breaker if I'm generating too much or generating too little. Like this should just happen automatically.
Whenever my friend Diane and I run into something like this, we always say, what do stupid people do? And the one time she looks at me, she goes, maybe we are the stupid people.
generally, that's my experience. Yeah.
So the third condition, if you are home during the day when the power goes off and the battery is charged 100%, then you should turn off the breakers, which are located in the combiner box, and match your production with your consumption until solar production stops when the sun goes down. The next morning, you should turn on until the battery is charged 100% while ensuring you keep 20% charge for the next day if the grid is still down.
Yeah.
So I wrote to our friend Jolly that we met at dinner that time, and he told us, there it is. I asked him, I said, during a power outage, he has a Tesla Powerwall and Powerwalls, and he has Tesla panels. He actually sold his panels to somebody else and then bought Tesla panels.
Interesting.
And I'm not exactly sure why. Maybe that was when you had to have Tesla panels in order to get Tesla Powerwalls. So I said, during a power outage, can you charge your batteries from your solar panels while also using energy from the batteries to power your home? He said, absolutely. The real benefit of having a battery pack is that as soon as the outage occurs, it switches to the battery pack and it sends you a text telling you that it has done that. Then it is key that you monitor how much solar you're producing so your usage doesn't drain your battery packs, because then your lights will go off. And his Tesla roof just produced 88 kilowatts in a single day. He says he's hoping to hit 100 kilowatts one day soon.
That, again, you shouldn't have to turn it off at 20%. It should just turn off at 20%, or at least to tell you, like, hey, listen, you're at 20%. What do you want to do here?
Well, yeah. So that is interesting because that is a decision point, right? Maybe, you really need some power past 20%. Maybe you've got insulin in the refrigerator and you just have to hope for the best that it's going to come back on before you run out. I can see there could be a case where you really need that 20%.
Yeah. Or maybe you have a baby or whatever. It's like you're just like, oh, well, I'll deal with this tonight and then I'll go to a hotel where there's power tomorrow or whatever. This should not be a manual thing. This should not be something you have to think about. You shouldn't have to guess.
Well, yeah. Even like the 20% thing. You would think it would also, like, what do you do when it hits 20%?
Panic.
But I mean, do you shut all your breakers off to make sure you don't use it to 19? You probably want to practice this or something and, you know, run through some scenarios because, like you say, in the middle of a hurricane, you're worried about toilet paper. You really need to be able to practice it and know what you're going to do. You know, part of your emergency preparedness is run through the scenario. Okay, I'm pretending to throw the breaker now, honey.
Yeah. No, it's just like fire alarms.
Right, right. Well, I guess maybe this is a stay tuned to find out what we do. What do they do next?
And, we should talk again when you guys finally decide.
Exactly. We would definitely do it. And I'm sure we'll have all kinds of justifications for why we did it. Well, I think this was fun.
Yeah. Thank you for coming all the way to Arizona and hanging out and dealing with technical issues that seemingly just randomly happened.
Buzzy is back. Well, I've talked to my audience about how much I really detested my Universal Audio Thunderbolt, interface. And that's what Bodhi's using right now. And it seems to just have a mind of its own.
Yeah. Anybody that's listened to my podcast has also heard me complain about it. Although it's been really good lately. And today it just was like, I think they knew Allison and Steve were going to be here.
And I spoke poorly of it. That's probably what it was. Well, if you want to find out more about what Bodhi knows about electric cars and solar energy and renewable energy, you can find him at 918digital.com.
And then if you want to go and you want to hang out with Allison, everything good starts with podfeet.com.
That's right.
And thank you, everybody, for listening. Thank you, Allison and Steve, who's sitting about 12 feet away, socially distancing, for coming and hanging out. And we're going to have some enchiladas. And
oh, yeah. Sounds good.
All right. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Again, another awkward
outro
for me.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
All right, everybody. I want to thank Allison and Steve again for giving me so much of their day. It was honestly just one of the best times I've had in a really long time. So the last 2 weeks have been pretty great. Busy, but pretty great. I'm not going to lie. We mentioned a couple times in the podcast that we were having technical problems, and I don't think I explained this thoroughly or even at all at the beginning of this podcast. We had so many technical problems. We had buzzing. There was echo. You know, my wife came home during some of the part of the recording, and there were, you know, had to cut a lot of that stuff out. So if you didn't notice, well, that's awesome. But if you did notice, there were some problems technically during that segment. So I want to thank Allison for being very patient with me, because I on the inside, I was very embarrassed. And on the outside, I probably looked very embarrassed. So I want to thank Allison for being so, just kind of rolling with the punches. All right, let's get into our news here. Tesla is looking at reopening Giga Shanghai on April 18th, which is today. And they are calling back not all, but some of the employees. Just so you know, Giga Shanghai has been shut down since March 28th. And in that time, they've missed out on production of an estimated 40,000 vehicles, which is, you know, quite a lot. Even with this shutdown, though, Giga Shanghai did produce 182,174 vehicles in Q1, and 65,814 of those vehicles were produced in March. So still very impressive numbers, even though, you know, they had to shut down for 3 weeks. By the way, Tesla earnings call is April 20th, which is in 2 days. So Patreon supporters will get it early, and then everybody else should get it on Friday, barring any unforeseen problems on my part, which there's been a lot of lately. According to Electrek, Tesla superchargers cost 1/5 of what it would cost for one of their competitors' charging stations. That was poorly written. This number was based on numbers from the Texas Volkswagen Environmental Mitigation Program. This is just basically what Volkswagen had to pay because of the Dieselgate issue. And this is how Texas is distributing funds. So Tesla applied for grants to help pay for supercharger rollout. And it sounds like Tesla was only asking for $30,000 per charger, while other applicants were asking for the full $150,000 max per charger, which is, that's a lot of money and a big discrepancy. The grants cover 70% of the charger. So it would cost, if we're doing the math right here, a total of $43,000 per supercharger versus $200,000 roughly for other applicants. And those other applicants were companies like ChargePoint and Electrify America. Probably wouldn't be on there since Volkswagen, but maybe they would. I don't know. And EVgo, that kind of thing, those kind of companies. So $43,000, not too bad. I wonder if these companies like ChargePoint aren't asking for the max of $150,000. But it really doesn't cost them anywhere close to that. That's just a lot of administrative costs that they're trying to legally grift. But we'll, I don't know. Maybe I might be wrong on there. I'm not accusing anybody of anything. I'm just curious as to what it actually costs to produce and install an actual charger from these third-party charging manufacturers. And I pick on ChargePoint, but I don't mean to. I don't have any issues with ChargePoint, nor do I think they're doing anything wrong. Now that I feel very, very exposed legally, you can now reserve a Tesla Roadster you have to put down $5,000 and then wire Tesla an additional $45,000, I think in 30 days. And that's the deposit, is a total of $50,000. So if you have that, please let me know. I would love to know if you reserved a Tesla Roadster. And if you want to give me a ride in one, I would be happy to fly to wherever you are and accept that ride. We talked about the rumored Tesla Model Y standard range all-wheel drive a few weeks ago. We kind of thought we would see an announcement, or I kind of thought we'd see an announcement at the Giga Rodeo event. We didn't see one. But Tesla has now officially launched this vehicle, so let's go over the official stats. It's all-wheel drive, 4680 battery cells, structural battery pack, 279-mile range, $60,000 for the price, and it's currently only available to employees only, although we think it's going to be expanded past that before too long. But also, $60,000, are you kidding me? I honestly thought the perfect price for this vehicle would be about $50,000, but $55,000 would be a stretch, right? But I still think a good price. But $60,000 is only $3,000 less than the Model Y long range. So come on, man, that's ridiculous. That's so much money. $60,000 is just so much money. I don't even know what Tesla's doing at this point, and you know, along the same lines of I don't know what Tesla is doing, Tesla will stop bundling the mobile charger with the purchase of a vehicle. And the reason cited by Elon on Twitter was low usage statistics. So not very many people are using it. So they don't think there's a value add to add it in the vehicle. So let me get this straight. You purchase a vehicle and at home you don't have a wall charger. Because why? Maybe you can't get it installed because there's a backlog. Maybe they're sold out and you know you're waiting right now. Tesla's wall chargers are not sold out, but maybe you went with a different company. But your Tesla came before you can get it installed. Let's say maybe you live in an apartment complex, or you own a condo, or you're renting a home, and the homeowner won't let you shell out, you know, a bunch of money to upgrade for a Tesla charger to put in your garage. Yeah, this is ridiculous. Elon said that Tesla is going to make it easier for you to buy this mobile charger for $200 when you buy the vehicle. Now, I looked on Tesla's website before recording this, and it's still on sale. The mobile charger is still on sale for $275, and currently it's out of stock. So I'm guessing when Elon said this is when you purchase your car, you can add the mobile charger for an extra $200. I think this is nickel and diming. Like, this is silly. A wall charger is $495, which I don't think is a lot of money. And from what I understand, it's about $400 or $500 right around there to get it, depending on what you need. Not every house is the same. You might pay more, you might pay less to get it installed. But I know people in Phoenix who are trying to find people to install a charger for, they already have Teslas. They're trying to install chargers in their garage and they can't. This is a big metropolitan area, and they're having a hard time finding somebody that can charge these, install these chargers. I think this is a very dumb move. And actually, I wanted to say naughty words on this podcast about how stupid I think this is on Tesla's part. This is where Tesla is going to start losing people. There are other EV manufacturers out there where they're a combination of internal combustion engine and EV manufacturer, or just straight up EV manufacturers. There are other EV manufacturers out there who are willing to provide this. Like, Tesla used to be tops in customer service. And I have been hearing more and more issues with people taking their Tesla in for service or in for repair, and they are having issues. Not everybody has that problem, like Sierra and Brad, when they took their Tesla in the last time. They had a fantastic experience. But I think doing things like this, you're going to start turning people off. Like, the Tesla has increased the price of their vehicles over the last year and a half by over $10,000 and on almost every vehicle model. Now, I don't know if those numbers are 100% correct because I didn't check them, but from what I know from doing this podcast, I'm pretty sure that that's correct. Customers have absorbed the cost, but they are, I don't think they're willing to continue to be nickeled and dimed. And this is what Tesla's doing here, is nickeling and diming people. There are plenty of people who use this mobile charger for legitimate reasons to charge their vehicle, whether that's at work or that's because of the other reasons I've stated. Maybe they travel a lot and the mobile charger is very useful that way. I don't like this move by Tesla. And as you could probably tell, it makes me very angry. Like, there's going to be a point when these other car manufacturers, EV manufacturers, are going to look what Tesla's doing and they're like, oh, you're going to stop doing that? Oh, that's no problem. We don't mind doing that. We'll steal a little bit of your market share. We're going to offer these features or this equipment to you at when you purchase your vehicle. We're not going to charge you extra. Like, this is a little too much. What is this mobile connector cost Tesla? Like $75, maybe $100 tops. This isn't a lot of money. And you're paying a lot of money for this vehicle. It's a little ridiculous. All right, let's talk about this Elon and Twitter. I'm just going to run down the timeline, really, is what I'm going to do. And I'm not going to give dates or anything. I'm just going to kind of give like a chronological order of what's gone down to this point. Elon bought 9-ish% of Twitter. Twitter gave him a spot on the board, and he promised or signed paperwork that would say that he couldn't own more than 14.9% of Twitter while he was on the board. And he was given, you know, this would be a 2-year term. Twitter employees revolt. They are not happy about Elon joining the board. Elon decides not to join the board and instead make an offer of $54.20 a share of buying Twitter outright. The total cost would be about $43 billion. While all this stuff is happening, a Twitter shareholder decided to sue Elon for not disclosing his investments in the proper time frame. Twitter has lost its collective mind. My Twitter feed is so full of crap that I don't care about right now involving Elon and Twitter. I just want them to go away. I don't want to talk about it anymore. And honestly, this will be the last time we talk about it on this podcast unless something huge happens. But to kind of cap this off, Elon did an interview at a TED conference in Vancouver, and I'm going to break down some of the highlights of that interview. So let's go ahead and jump into Elon's interview. All right, let's go ahead and jump into the Elon portion of this week's show. Elon was interviewed by a gentleman at Giga Texas. The interview happened a week ago. As far as I know, it hasn't been published yet, but it's supposed to be published on Sunday night. So I'm not going to have that for you this week. Maybe that will be a Patreon exclusive. But that's an 18-minute interview that they had at Giga Texas, because they weren't sure or not if Elon was going to be able to make it to the TED conference in Vancouver. So that's why they did that really cool 18-minute interview. Now we have an excerpt from that, and I'm going to play that here. And then it jumps into the actual TED conference in Vancouver where Elon's on stage. And we're going to talk about Twitter and production hell and Elon's mental health during that time. So let's go ahead and jump into our first clip, which is about full self-driving and why it's so hard to predict.
In order to solve full self-driving properly, you actually just you have to solve real-world AI. Because you say, like, what are the road networks designed to work with? They're designed to work with a biological neural net, our brains, and with vision, our eyes. And so, in order to make it work with computers, you basically need to solve real-world AI. And vision, because we need we need cameras and silicon neural nets in order to have self-driving work for a system that was designed for eyes and biological neural nets. When you put it that way, it's sort of like quite obvious that the only way to solve full self-driving is to solve real-world AI and sophisticated vision.
What do you feel about the current architecture? Do you think you have an architecture now where there is a chance for the logarithmic curve not to tail off any time soon?
Well, I mean, admittedly, these may be an infamous last words, but I actually am confident that we will solve it this year.
All right. Not throwing shade at Elon on this, but I don't think they're going to solve it this year based on what I've seen with the full self-driving beta. But maybe within 3 years, they'll be really close to it. I do think it's interesting that our road system, you know, is designed for people and not AI. And that's why it's a difficult problem to solve. This isn't something that should be like new to anyone. You know, we came up with the rules of the road and our road systems all the way back, you know, as far back as the Romans. So it kind of makes sense that we kind of have a system that's not really set up for autonomous vehicles. Like it's going to take us a while to get there. It's going to be a blend of changing how we set up road systems with also, you know, these autonomous vehicles. So let's go ahead and jump into the next clip, which is all about the Optimus robot and home use.
But talk about, I mean, I think the first applications you've mentioned are probably going to be manufacturing, but eventually the vision is to have these available for people at home, correct?
Yes.
If you had a robot that really understood the 3D architecture of your house and knew where every object in that house was or was supposed to be and could recognize all those objects. I mean, that's kind of amazing, isn't it? Like that, the kind of thing that you could ask a robot to do would be what? Like tidy up.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or
make dinner, I guess, mow the lawn.
Take a cup of tea to grandma and show her family absolutely. Pictures. And
exactly, take care of my grandmother and make sure. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it could recognize everyone in the home.
Yeah.
Could play catch with your kids.
Yes. I mean, obviously we need to be careful that this doesn't become a dystopian situation. I think one of the things that's going to be important is to have a localized ROM chip on the robot that cannot be updated over the air, where if you, for example, were to say stop, that would, if anyone said that, then the robot would stop, you know, type of thing. And that's not updatable remotely. I think it's going to be important to have safety features like that.
Yeah, that sounds wise.
And I do think there should be a regulatory agency for AI. I've said this for many years. I don't love being regulated, but I think this is an important thing for public safety.
And do you think there will be, basically, like in, say, 2050 or whatever, that like a robot in most homes is what there will be, and people will them and count on them? You'll have your own butler, basically.
Yeah, you'll have your sort of buddy robot, probably. Yeah.
I mean, how much of a buddy? How many applications have you thought? Is there, you know, can you have a romantic partner, a sex partner?
I mean,
a lot of
it's
learning
probably inevitable.
Okay, I would love to have one of these Optimus robots at my house. And I'm not really looking forward to, or I'm not really looking at having a sex partner Optimus robot. I'm actually looking more for somebody to vacuum, do my laundry, mop the floor, and also, you know, do the landscaping outside. That's what I need an Optimus robot for. I don't need it for those other things. But, you know, I'm not interested when I'm old to have this robot take care of me and be my friend, because I really think that devalues. Or I shouldn't say that. I think there's a bigger value in having actual human relationships. Although I know in China, in Japan, they have these, you know, little dogs that Sony produced, the little robot dogs that older folks in Japan really bonded with. So I can see that there's a value there, but I would rather have my kids come and visit me than, you know, the Optimus robot. All right. And our next clip, we're going to talk about the timeline for the Optimus robot.
So
What sort of timeline should we be thinking about of the first models that are actually made and sold?
Well, you know, the first units that we tend to make are for jobs that are dangerous, boring, repetitive, and things that people don't want to do. And, you know, I think we'll have like an interesting prototype sometime this year. We might have something useful next year, but I think quite likely within at least 2 years. And then we'll see rapid growth year over year of the usefulness of the humanoid robots and decrease in cost and scaling up production.
Help me on the economics of this. So what do you picture the cost of one of these being?
Well, I think the cost is actually not going to be crazy high.
All right. I cut Elon off when he was going to announce how much he thought the Optimus robot would cost. But what he said was it would be cheaper than a car. Right now, Tesla's cheapest car is almost $50,000. So that's a pretty big span in terms of how much this thing might actually end up costing in the real world. I'm not going to pay that much money for a robot to do housework around my house, even if it cooked me dinner and did all of the housework. But I would consider paying $10,000 for something like that. All right, let's go ahead and transition to the interview that happened in Toronto. In our first clip, Elon's going to explain why in the world he would want to buy Twitter.
Twitter has become kind of the de facto town square. It's really important that people have both the reality and the perception that they are able to speak freely within the bounds of the law. So one of the things that I believe Twitter should do is open source the algorithm and make any changes to people's tweets. You know, if they're emphasized or de-emphasized, that action should be made apparent so anyone can see that action has been taken. So there's no sort of behind-the-scenes manipulation, either algorithmically or manually.
But last week when we spoke, Elon, I asked you whether you were thinking of taking over. You said, no way. You said, I do not want to own Twitter. It is a recipe for misery. Everyone will blame me for everything. What on earth changed?
No, I think everyone will still blame me for everything. Yeah. If I acquire Twitter and something goes wrong, it's my fault, 100%. I think there will be quite a few errors, yes.
It will be miserable, but you still want to do it. Why?
I mean, I hope it's not too miserable, but I just think it's important to the function. It's important to the function of democracy. It's important to the function of the United States as a free country and many other countries, and to help actually to help freedom in the world more broadly than the U.S. I think there's the risk, civilizational risk is decreased if Twitter. The more we can increase the trust of Twitter as a public platform. And so I do think this will be somewhat painful, and I'm not sure that I will actually be able to acquire it. And I should also say the intent is to retain as many shareholders as is allowed by the law in a private company, which I think is around 2,000 or so. So it's definitely not from the standpoint of let me figure out how to monopolize or maximize my ownership of Twitter.
All right, let's go ahead and get into that real quick here. I 100% agree with Elon on free speech. Like, I do believe that even people who are saying terrible things have the right to say terrible things, like things I do not agree with in any way, shape, or form. I believe that they have that right because that is free speech. So I think minimizing free speech is problematic. However, I also don't think that social networks have that same obligation to honor free speech that like our government does here in the United States. And if Elon had mentioned that, you know, he thinks that Twitter should be like the place for free speech, as long as it adheres to the laws of the individual countries. Now, what I will say to that is you don't actually have the same level of free speech in Russia or China that you do here in the United States. And even in Western countries, you know, what constitutes free speech varies widely. So if you're a free speech absolutist, then this doesn't necessarily work, because some of these countries, you know, free speech doesn't exist at all, or is very, very limited and as to what you can say. So I also kind of think people have a really high opinion of what Twitter is and how important it is to our society, because I think Twitter can do great things. I think you can find, I think Twitter is valuable. However, you know, it's also kind of a cesspool. I don't know. I think people put too much emphasis on the importance of Twitter, because if Twitter went away tomorrow, not a lot would change in your day-to-day life, unless you somehow made your money from Twitter. In that case, that it would be devastating. I would like to see Twitter's algorithm opened up for review. I think that transparency as to why tweets are being promoted or not, I think that's important. Elon did say that he wanted to bring as many shareholders as the law would allow. So that sounds like that number's around 2,000. And then he was asked if, Elon was asked if he had a plan B if Twitter didn't accept his offer. And he said he did, but he didn't want to talk about it. So let's go ahead and jump into our next clip, which is about free speech, being a free speech absolutist, but then also having to deal with problematic tweets. So let's listen to that.
Well, I think we would want to err on this. If in doubt, let the speech, let it exist. It would have, you know, if it's a, you know, a gray area, I would say let the tweet exist. But obviously, you know, in a case where there's perhaps a lot of controversy, that you would not want to necessarily promote that tweet. I'm not saying that I have all the answers here. But I do think that we want to be just very reluctant to delete things and have just be very cautious with permanent bans. Timeouts I think are better than sort of permanent bans, and but just in general, like I said, how it won't be perfect, but I think we want it to really have, like I said, the perception and reality that speech is as free as reasonably possible. And a good sign as to whether there is free speech is someone you don't like allowed to say something you don't like. And if that is the case, then we have free speech. And it's damn annoying when someone you don't like says something you don't like. That is a sign of a healthy, functioning free speech situation.
I mostly agree with what he said there. I don't really have much to add. The next clip is, what is Elon going to do with Twitter if he buys it? Like, what changes is he going to make? So let's go ahead and listen to that.
Talk about some of the other changes that you've proposed. So the edit button, that's definitely coming. If you have your way.
Yes.
Yeah. And
a top priority I would have is eliminating the spam and scam bots and the bot armies that are on Twitter. I think these influence make the product much worse. If I had a Dogecoin for every crypto scam I saw, we'd have more, you know, 100 billion Dogecoin.
So. Do you regret sparking a sort of storm of excitement over Doge and, you know, where it's gone? Or
I mean, I think Doge is fun, and you know, I've always said, don't bet the farm on Dogecoin. But I think it's I like dogs and I like memes, and it's got both of those. And,
but just on the edit button, how do you get around the problem of, so someone tweets Elon rocks and it's tweeted by 2 million people, and then after that they edit it. So I'm Elon sucks. And then all those retweets, they're all embarrassed. And how do you avoid that type of changing of meaning so that retweeters are exploited?
Well, I think you'd only have the edit capability for a short period of time, and probably the thing to do upon the edit would be to zero out all retweets and favorites.
Okay,
I'm open to ideas, though. You know,
I am definitely on board with eliminating these spam bots. That is something that drives me crazy. The edit button, you know, I think there's a couple of different ways to implement this, and in either case, I would like to have an edit button, because there are times when I'm like, oh, I don't like the way that sounded, or I wish I would have, you know, said this differently, or I just made a simple spelling error and I just have to delete the tweet and then resubmit it. It doesn't really make a lot of sense not to have one. The next clip, Elon's going to talk about, you know, the interviewer makes a funny joke. I thought it was funny about funding being secured for Twitter. Reference to, I think it was in 2018 when Elon said he was going to take Tesla private and funding was secured. And then he got into some trouble with the SEC. So Elon's going to talk about that particular moment in his life. And you can tell he's very emotional. So let's go ahead and jump into that.
Is funding secured?
I have sufficient assets to complete the. It's not a forward-looking statement. Blah blah blah. I have. I mean, I can do it if possible.
Right.
I mean, I should say actually, even in originally the with Tesla back in the day, funding was actually secured. I want to be clear about that. In fact, this may be a good opportunity to clarify that. Funding was indeed secured. I should say, like, why do I not have respect for the SEC in that situation? And I don't mean to blame everyone at the SEC, but certainly the San Francisco office. It's because the SEC knew that funding was secured, but they pursued an active public investigation nonetheless. At the time, Tesla was in a precarious financial situation, and I was told by the banks that if I did not agree to settle with the SEC, that the banks would cease providing working capital and Tesla would go bankrupt immediately. So that's like having a gun to your child's head. So I was forced to concede to the SEC, unlawfully, those bastards, and now it makes it look like I lied when I did not in fact lie. I was forced to admit that I lied to save Tesla's life, and that's the only reason.
Given what's actually happened to Tesla since then, though, aren't you glad that you didn't take it private?
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult to put yourself in the position at the time. Tesla was under the most relentless short seller attack in the history of the stock market. There's something called short and distort, where the barrage of negativity that Tesla was experiencing from short sellers in Wall Street was beyond all belief. Tesla was the most shorted stock in the history of stock markets. Yeah. This is saying something. So, you know, this was affecting our ability to hire people. It was affecting our ability to sell cars. It was terrible. They wanted Tesla to die so bad they could taste it.
So if this is true, and I don't know if it is or not, but if this is true, I can see why Elon would be so frustrated with the SEC. And kind of along the same lines as the last clip that we listened to, the interviewer asks, you know, Elon, basically, why lash out at all of these folks, the short sellers, the people that are propagating false information, the government agencies, why lash out at these people? So let's listen to that.
I mean, obviously, a lot of people who support you, I would have thought, would say, you have so much to offer the world on the upside, on the vision side. Don't waste your time getting distracted by these battles that bring out negativity and make people feel that you're being defensive. Like, people don't like fights, especially with powerful government authorities. They'd rather buy into your dream. Aren't you encouraged by people just to edit that in that, you know, temptation out and go with the bigger story?
Well, I mean, I would say, like, you know, I'm somewhat of a mixed bag, you know, I mean.
Well, you're a fighter, and you don't like to lose, and you are determined that you don't, basically. I mean, you are.
Sure, I don't like to lose, and I'm not sure many people do. But the truth matters to me a lot. Really, like, sort of pathologically, it matters to me.
And I understand the frustration of where Elon's coming from, but I'm going to say which truth, because the truth can be very subjective depending on which side of the line you're sitting on. So, you know, what might be, and I think this is a silly way to put this, but what might be Elon's truth may not necessarily be what the SEC or other people see as the truth. Like, there's, everybody has a different perspective on things. The next clip is, I thought was very interesting. And it was basically, if you could change one decision that you made in your life, what would it be? So let's go ahead and listen to that.
If you could go back in time and change one decision you made along the way, do your own edit button, which one would it be and why?
Do you mean like a career decision or something?
Just any decision over the last few years, like your decision to invest in Twitter in the first place, or your anything.
I mean, the worst business decision I ever made was not starting Tesla with just J.B. Straubel. By far the worst decision I've ever made is not just starting Tesla with J.B. That's the number one by far.
All right, so J.B. Straubel was the visionary co-founder who was obsessed with and knew so much about batteries. And your decision to go with Tesla, the company as it was, meant that you got locked into what you concluded was a weird architecture now of this.
There's a lot of confusion. Tesla did not exist in any. Tesla was a shell company with no employees, no intellectual property when I invested. But a false narrative has been created by one of the other co-founders, Martin Eberhard. And I don't want to get into the nastiness here, but I didn't invest in an existing company. We created a company.
Yeah.
And ultimately, the creation of that company was done by JV and me. And unfortunately, there's someone else, another co-founder who has made it his life's mission to make it sound like he created the company, which is false.
All right. Not taking anything away from what the team at Tesla has created to this point. The fact is that Martin Eberhard and Mark Tarpanian, they were the initial founders of Tesla. How much they did or didn't do, I don't know, but they were founded. Tesla was founded by those two people in 2003. Again, I'm not trying to take anything away from J.B. Straubel, Elon, or anyone else who was around during that time. But those are the people that actually were there in the beginning. And I do think that in general, J.B. and Elon deserved to have like a founder status because they were there very early on and they were instrumental and they earned that status, but they had to go to court to get it because they weren't initially given founder status. So, you know, there's that. But honestly, why lash out? Be the bigger person, you know, in a lot of ways you have won at life. There's no reason to be petty. at this stage. If somebody else wants to be petty, and I'm not even saying either one of those, Martin or Mark, I don't even know if they're being petty, but if somebody else wants to be petty, let them be petty. Why should you be petty? And this goes back to the previous clip. The truth is subjective. So the two original guys, that Martin and Mark, they may have a different view of what happened than JB and Elon, for instance. So it doesn't make a lot of sense to me to hold on to this and be petty about it. You just say, you know what? It didn't work out between us, and move on. That's as far as it needs to go. Anyway, we're going to talk or hear in our next clip about production hell with the Model 3 and Elon's mental status during that time.
So surely it should be an absolute strategic priority to look after yourself.
I mean, there wasn't any other way to make it work. The 3 years of hell, 2017, 18, and 19, were 3 years, the longest period of excruciating pain in my life. There wasn't any other way, and we barely made it, and we were on the ragged edge of bankruptcy the entire time. So
when you
felt like
around,
I want pain, I don't like it. Those were so much pain, but it had to be done, or Tesla would be dead.
When you looked around the Gigafactory that we saw images of earlier last week, and just see where the company has come, I mean, do you feel that this challenge of figuring out the new way of manufacturing that you actually have an edge now, that it's different, that you've figured out how to do this, and from those 3 years won't be repeated. You've actually figured out a new way of manufacturing.
At this point, I think I know more about manufacturing than anyone currently alive on Earth.
Tweet that.
Yeah. I can tell you how every damn part in that car is made. It's basically, if you just live in the factory for 3 years and just...
That was nice. Sort of that was
poignant note to something.
Someone wants to compose a symphony to that expression of confidence, something like that. I have no idea what that is.
Anyway, yeah, I every aspect of a car, 6 ways to Sunday, I know.
I wonder if Elon, you know, with age and time, will look back at that 3 years and the craziness that he went through, and the sometimes unhinged tweets and lashing out. I wonder if he'll look back at that time and time spent away from his family. If he'll look back and think, was it worth it or not? Because I don't know that Tesla would have necessarily failed. There's a lot of outcomes that could have happened, and failure is certainly one of those outcomes. I guess what I'm saying is there going to be any regrets on Elon's part? Like, there have been times in my life that I've been so focused on something that, you know, I've honestly damaged relationships. I've, you know, I was stressed out needlessly. And when I look back at those times, it felt very necessary at the time. But now, given a little bit of space, and I'm sure many of you, if not all of you, have felt the same way, but given a little bit of space, I feel like I was pretty foolish to think that. I wonder if Elon feels that same way, because he did make a comment in there that he probably knows more about manufacturing than anyone else on the planet. And I will say, maybe. He knows more about manufacturing Tesla vehicles and battery packs maybe than anyone else on the planet. I don't even know that that's true. But he's certainly probably one of the most knowledgeable CEOs when it comes to the smallest part of the company and how it functions. I will give him that. There's probably other people that know quite a bit more about manufacturing than he does, because if he would have followed their advice, he probably wouldn't have had such a problem with production hell, honestly. So We have some parting words from Elon. So let's go ahead and listen to that.
Elon, one of the things that was most touching last week was seeing you hang out with your kids. Here's, if I may...
It looks vaguely like a ventriloquist dummy there. I mean, how do you know that's real?
So that's X, and you know, it was just a delight seeing you hang out with him. And
sure.
What's his future going to be? I mean, I don't mean him personally, but the world he's going to grow up in. What future do you believe he will grow up in?
Well, I mean, a very digital future. a different world than I grew up in, that's for sure. But I think we want to obviously do our absolute best to ensure that the future is good for everyone's children. And that, you know, that the future is something that you can look forward to and not feel sad about. You know, you want to get up in the morning and be excited about the future, and we should fight for the things that make us excited about the future. You know, the future cannot just be about one miserable thing after another, solving one sad problem after another. There got to be things that get you excited, like you want to live. These things are very important, and we should have more of it.
And it's not as if it's a done deal. Like it's all to play for. Like the future may be horrible. Still, there are scenarios where it is horrible, but you see a pathway to an exciting future, both on Earth and on Mars and in our minds through artificial intelligence and so forth. I mean, in your heart of hearts, do you really believe that you are helping deliver that exciting future for X and for others?
I mean, I'm trying my hardest to do so. I love humanity, and I think that we should fight for a good future for humanity, and I think we should be optimistic about the future and fight to make that optimistic future happen.
All right, that is where we're going to leave this episode. This might be the longest episode I've ever produced. Pretty crazy. And it also might be the longest I've ever taken to produce an episode. But I'm not going to keep you guys any longer. If you want to email me, it's Bodie, Bodie, at 918digital.com. You can find me on Twitter at 918digital. If you have any questions, please Oh, man. I'm going to leave it in because it's long. This is a long episode and nobody's going to listen this long. If you have any questions or anything, just reach out to me. I'm happy to answer whatever questions you may or may not have. I don't know. I'm getting loopy here. All right, everybody. Thank you very much for listening. Have a great week.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.